Welcome to the Big K Morning Show. This hour, our in-studio guest is the president and CEO of the Heinz History Center, just named Pittsburgh's most popular museum. Andy Masick is here. How many years in a row now for Pittsburgh Magazine?
3 years in a row. We've been named Pittsburgh's favorite museum by the readers of Pittsburgh Magazine.
And nationally, internationally for that matter.
Well, USA Today and their 4.6 million readers named the Heinz History Center the best history museum in America.
That is quite a ribbon for you and your team, because I know you have such passion for what you do, and it shows in your work. And I think a lot of people, born and bred Pittsburghers, right under their nose in many cases, they have this awesome museum. In some cases say, well, I've been there, but maybe only for something for a short period of time. And you're always changing. You have exhibits that come and stay for a period of time, and they're spectacular.
Well, some of those exhibits come from the Smithsonian Institution, and some of them are homegrown. Right now, we have an exhibit called A Woman's Place. It's about 100 Pittsburgh area women, Western Pennsylvania women, who changed the world for the better. And this is something our curators and partners pulled together. You can see Nellie Bly's actual bag that she took around the world in 72 days in 1889.
Which was an unbelievable feat in its time.
They thought, Jules Verne said, around the world in 80 days. Everyone said, well, that's fiction. Nobody could do that. Well, Nellie Bly, this girl from Pittsburgh, does it, and she does it in 72 days. She takes steamers and camels and bicycles, and she walks, and she makes it around the world with just a change of clothing in this little bag that, the men of the country said, oh, a woman couldn't make it around the world without steamer trunks full of all kinds of clothes and amenities. And she, I'll show them. And she just takes this little grip, this tiny little bag, alligator purse, really, and she makes it around the world and shows everybody up.
And I loved the special exhibits, the Vietnam War era, and then the exhibit where you had the actual command module.
That was that
amazing. Went to the moon.
Yeah, Destination Moon, we called it. And we did that in partnership with the Smithsonian. We were one of four museums in America that got the actual Columbia capsule that took Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins to the moon in 1969. I mean, you could touch the, you could almost touch it. We wouldn't let you touch it. But you could just feel like you'd stretch out your hand and touch that iconic piece of history.
To that point was just incredible. And that was just one of the pieces that were there that just mind-blowing. And then realizing how big a role Pittsburgh played in all those moon launches and other NASA. Yeah,
just think about that, Larry. PPG makes the windows in that capsule. North American Rockwell builds the Columbia capsule and the Saturn V rockets that hurled that thing into outer space. Westinghouse makes the cameras that bring you the live images from the moon that people watched on their television sets. It was a miracle. Even the flag that's on the moon was rigged up by Jack Kinzler, a Pittsburgh guy. He didn't have a college education, but he was the MacGyver of NASA. He could do anything. He could patch anything together. And he said, you know what? There's no wind on the moon. If we put an American flag on the moon, it's going to hang there like a limp rag. So he makes this telescoping aluminum pole, cantilevers and arm on it, goes to Sears and Roebuck and buys the $5 nylon flag instead of the $2.50 cotton flag, because his buddy said, hey, you know, this is forever, so maybe you ought to get the, you know, spring for the $5.
Oh, that's gold. I want to talk to you about, again, Independence Day coming up in just a minute here with Andy Masick, the Big K Morning Show, because the history of this is so rich and so many incredible, iconic people have come through Pittsburgh. And then there's Lewis and Clark, who launched their expedition from here, on and on. Heinz History Center's Andy Masick on the Big K Morning Show. We're with Andy Masick, President and CEO of the Heinz History Center, in studio on a very important holiday week. And Independence Day has great connections to southwestern Pennsylvania, as Andy indicated a few minutes ago. But Andy, the flag is such a iconic representation, mm-hmm. obviously, of our country. But you're doing something really special as we get to Independence Day.
That's right. On July 4th at 1 p.m. down at the Point, right in the yard of the blockhouse. And I think everyone knows that the blockhouse is owned and operated by the Daughters of the American Revolution, the Fort Pitt chapter. And working with the History Center, we put up a 100-foot-tall flagpole, and we've got an authentic-sized American flag. Now, a garrison like Fort Pitt would have a 36-foot by 20-foot flag, so you could see it for 5 miles. Think about it, a bastion in the wilderness. People would see that flag flying and say, that's civilization.
Right.
That's America. And they would come like moths to a flame to that flag. Well, on July 4th this year, you'll be able to help us raise that flag. You can hold on to it. In fact, we need a lot of people to hold on to it because it's like a giant sail, 36 feet.
Right.
A gust of wind comes up. One year we had Boy Scouts in the trees when that thing lifted. So we need as many people as we can down at Fort Pitt on July 4th at 1 p.m.
And the blockhouse is the oldest standing building in Pittsburgh.
That's absolutely right.
I learned that from you, actually.
Well, it was built in 1764, 1763, at the end of Pontiac's Rebellion. You know, Pittsburgh was surrounded by Senecas and Hurons and Shawnees and Delaware people who said, hey, enough is enough. You Americans are moving into native lands, and we're going to make a stand here. So they surrounded Fort Pitt. And it was pretty touch and go until a big battle was fought at a place called Bushy Run,
right,
about 20 miles from here. And the Indians were defeated, and the siege of Fort Pitt was lifted, and that that really established the Pittsburgh as a viable city or town.
And there were four forts. People forget about that fourth one a lot of times. A lot can at least name Fort Pitt and Fort Duquesne, and then Fort Prince George.
And Trent's Fort, they call that fort, that first little fort that the French captured to build Fort Duquesne. And Duquesne was a nice little wooden fort. But when General Forbes and George Washington rode in 1758, they said, what are we going to call this place now? We can't call it Duquesne. That sounds way too French. And so Forbes was a Scotsman. He grew up near Edinburgh. And he said, well, why don't we call it Pittsburgh? We'll call it Pittsburgh with an H on the end, like a Scottish burgh, not a German burg.
Right.
And so Washington and Forbes.
That's how we got the H.
That's why we have that H.
And for a while, we didn't have the H.
You know, in 1890, the U.S. government, in their wisdom, decided we're going to standardize all spellings to make it easier for postal carriers. So all the burgs in America were dropping an H if one appears there. Well, the people of Pittsburgh were incensed. You can't take our H. And they petitioned Congress. It took them 20 years to do it. But in 1911, Pittsburgh got its H restored. And that's why we have an H today.
And two summers ago, you took the famous actress Jane Seymour and a small group. I was with them on a tour, and she was shocked, being British, the British history that connects here too, including, I don't think she realized at one point George Washington was in the British Army.
Yeah, he sure was. He really wanted to be a professional British soldier. He wanted a royal commission and a red coat. But he never got one. And the governor of Virginia, Robert Dinwiddie, sent him on a mission out here to the forks of the Ohio. That's what they called the confluence of the three rivers in those days. And Washington didn't have a royal commission. He had a Virginia provincial commission. And he said, that's okay, but I'd really like that red coat. And so General Braddock said, hey, kid, you be my aide-de-camp. Come out in 1755. We'll capture Fort Duquesne, and we'll see what we can do about that royal commission. Well, Braddock dies, shot down at where the town of Braddock is, about 8 miles from where we're sitting here at the confluence. And Braddock dies, and so does George Washington's hope of becoming a British officer, for real.
And then how did he detach? Because to the Brits, he was a turncoat.
Well, he sure was. And when the Patriots in Boston got together, you know, they had just fought the Battle of Bunker Hill and told King George what for. And the New Englanders needed Virginia in the fight. They had to hang together, or most assuredly they'd hang separately. And so the Virginians said, the Bostonians said, what about that George Washington? He looks good in a uniform, and he's the only one of us that's had any kind of experience. Well, he's lost every battle he's been in, but still, he's got some military experience during the French and Indian War. And so in order to get Virginia in the fight, John Adams and others recruit Washington to be the commander of the American Army, the Continental Army, and the rest is history.
That is absolutely incredible. We're with Andy Masick, President and CEO of the Heinz History Center. There is a lot going on in the future, too. I want to kind of give you a chance to give us a vision of what's to come. And by the way, I'm happy that the Heinz ketchup bottle is solid now, right? And it's a part of the out exterior of the museum in the Strip District, as it should be.
That giant ketchup bottle that used to pour neon ketchup in Heinz Field in the red zone when the Steelers were in the red zone now has a permanent home at the Heinz History Center. You can see it on Smallman Street as you drive up, and you can see it's placed right next to the original goalposts from Three Rivers Stadium.
That's so cool.
And those two things kind of announce that this is the Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum at the Heinz History
Center. And that's a whole nother area, because we love our sports here, as you know, and the people just, when they go in there, they marvel. How many times do you talk to people who are in from out of town that want to come get a taste, and they're mesmerized by what you have going there?
Well, 350,000 people come to the Heinz History Center every year, and many of them are from out of town. Sometimes they come for games, and they're wearing their colors, their jerseys from different teams. But they know that Pittsburgh is a sports town, and they revel in the sports history that we have 20,000 square feet of exhibits. And
it's awesome.
You're greeted by Franco Harris right at the entrance to the museum. And it's, you know, we made a life cast of Franco's face when he was still with us. And some of his DNA is in that life mask.
That's
because
beautiful.
When we pulled the mold off, it pulled some of his hair out of his beard, and it re-implanted when we cast the
That's
positive.
That's awesome. What a wonderful human being he was. And he had a great appreciation for the history there. And I told Aaron, our producer, earlier also, you have the cleanest indoor air of any building in the city, or anywhere else for that matter.
Because we're a Smithsonian Museum, we have very high standards for air filtering, temperature and humidity control, because we want those things, whether it's the first Jeep in the history of the world or Franco Harris's immaculate reception cleats that are there, we want them to be here for hundreds of years. So we do everything we can to maintain a stable Smithsonian environment.
I remember, though, during COVID, it was a selling point to just come in and breathe fresh air.
That's right.
Clean air. This is the Big K Morning Show. I'm with Andy Masick, President and CEO of the Heinz History Center, which is a great resource and iconic right there in the Strip District. And Andy, the Strip District in and of itself has this revitalized history too, because it goes way back. I learned from you why it's called the Strip District. It's the flat land there.
Below, at the base of the Hill District.
Right, before it goes to the river, obviously.
Right.
And then it became the produce yards for many, many years. And that terminal, which has been reimagined, is almost fully occupied and up and running.
It is a happening place, let me tell you.
And you're right there across from the parking lot next to the convention center, for
right.
those that don't know. And then you go over a block to Penn Avenue. It's like walking back in time. It's still all the eclectic little shop owners, street vendors, and it has that kind of feel.
It's the best of both worlds, the old and the new. There are 5,000 new residents living in the Strip District.
So 5,000?
Yeah. It's a much more vital, active place. 25 years ago, at 5 o'clock, they rolled up the sidewalks, and there are tumbleweeds in the dirt parking lots down there. Today, it is a very livable community, walkable community, and a lot of young people there in the Strip as well. So we're delighted with the way the Strip has evolved. And you know, when Fort Pitt was there 250 years ago, the Strip District was called the Northern Liberties. You know about East Liberty.
Right.
Well, this was the Northern Liberties. And all liberties meant was it was kind of common land, open space where you could let your animals loose to graze, the liberties, like commons almost.
Oh, wow.
And that name stuck in East Liberty, but not so in the Strip District, which was once the Northern Liberties.
And it's interesting because some people come from out of town. They hear the Strip District. They think
it freaks
it's something,
them out. Yeah.
They think it's something
Red
else.
Red Light District.
Meanwhile, what can you tease us with what's coming at the Heinz History Center?
Well, you have a few more weeks to see an exhibit called Wars for Empire and Liberty, and it's about the French and Indian War morphing into the American Revolution. Great artwork. If you want to see young George Washington, red-haired, 6 feet, 2.5 inch tall, lanky Virginia George Washington, we've got a lifelike figure of him. But we also have paintings done by an artist named Don Troiani. He's famous for his Civil War art, but he's also done a series of revolutionary art. And I encourage people to come and see that. Down at Fort Pitt, we have a new exhibit just opened last week. It's called Homelands. It's the Native Nations of Allegheny. And Allegheny is what Native people called the confluence of the three rivers, Allegheny. And now we use it to name our county, but in 250 years ago, Shawnee and Seneca people called Allegheny the three rivers. But we worked with Native people in Oklahoma and New York because, you know, these tribes, the Delaware, Shawnee, and Seneca people, are no longer living here. They're on reservations in Oklahoma and New York. Well, they've come back home to work with our curators to create this exhibit. So it's from their point of view. It's their voice. So come see Homelands, Native Nations of Allegheny.
A lot of people might not realize that you have that affiliation with the Fort Pitt Museum. And the blockhouse is right there at the entrance to Point State Park.
That's right. The Daughters of the American Revolution operate the blockhouse, and the Heinz History Center operates the Fort Pitt Museum. It's a great partnership, and that's why this 4th of July, that's a great place to bring your family down to the point and help us raise that 36-foot garrison flag right in the blockhouse yard. It's the flag that you see flying over the point when you are going over the Fort Pitt tunnel or the bridge. So, you know, it's pretty cool to think you can actually touch that flag and be a part of our history.
How did Andy Masick get so impassioned about history? Really?
Do you really want to know?
Yeah. What point in your life growing up where clearly you love what you do, it shows in everything you do, Where does that come from?
I actually do know. I was 10 years old. I was at Lake Chautauqua, New York, and my grandparents had a house there. And up in the attic, there was a trunk. It was my grandfather's trunk. And I opened it up one day, blew the dust off the top, reached in, and there was a cigar box. And in the cigar box was a Civil War bullet, a mini ball, you know, a big pointed bullet with a hollow base, 69 caliber. And I asked my grandmother about it. She didn't know anything about it. So I drew a picture of it on my school notebook paper, sent it to the Smithsonian Institution. And to their credit, one of those curators wrote back to me and said, "Son, what you have there is a mini ball invented by Captain Manet of the French Army in 1849. It revolutionized warfare and made the Civil War the deadliest war in American history." And I started collecting mini balls, and I turned my boyhood bedroom into a museum. You had to take a brochure from a rack on the door of my bedroom in order to gain access to my bedroom. And there were the Monitor and the Merrimack were made out of popsicle sticks, and hats were made out of paper mache, and there were labels on everything. So that's how I started my museum career.
Did your parents live to see you become this incredible leader of our museums?
My mother sure did, and she loved it. She was such a... She encouraged me so much and sort of helped me along the way follow my dream.
Andy Masick with the Heinz History Center, President and CEO. Coming up, we're going to talk to Marty before we're going to sit down, and you're going to create some of your time capsules, which we love each and every morning and afternoon here.
There are so many time capsules. We're going to talk about the first transcontinental flight in history, and Sophie Maslow and the Liberty Tubes, and how Forbes Avenue came to be. There's so much history here.
Thank you so much for coming in. Coming up 10 until 2, it's Marty Griffin and Marty with Andy Masick here. We're going to record some time capsules. Want to get a statue of you down there in the Strip District.
Yeah. Your boy, Frank Rendy.
Oh, yeah. How about this, Andy? After 31 years as Pittsburgh police officer who's in the Strip, you know Frank Rendy.
Yeah,
You got to know.
Yeah.
He's got 3 days left on the job.
Oh, no.
And about 60 of the business owners in the Strip got together and gave him a cake yesterday.
Nice. The end of an era.
He was the highest paid. He was like, no, it's not funny. It's actually true. He was the highest paid Pittsburgh cop for about 20 years. Insane.
Why?
Overtime.
Oh.
Worked like 19 jobs. I love him. We go way back. I chased him down the street several times with a camera, and it wasn't to celebrate his birthday.
You've been to the Heinz History Center.
But he's old school, Frank. He goes back to the let's make a movie kind of days. Yes, of course. The Heinz History Center is amazing. Come on.
What do you got coming up?
Before we get to that, you know, time, how it marches on, and how it's marked by various things. And Andy, you know this, and you can relate to this probably better than anyone, because you know so much about history. Think about how many Pittsburghers had moments with Gus, the ice ball man. Think about the smile on his face. Think about hot afternoon, north side. Hey, man, let's have an ice ball. Think of how many of our children, that was their first engagement with either A, an ice ball, B, the kindness and greatness of that man, or just C, the joy of being in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a bunch of things that happen when people start to pass, honestly. 70 years, my man was doing that. So 92, I'll take 92, Larry, right? However, comma, as I like to say. It starts to mark all the different people that you know and love that start to pass. And I'm not trying to be morbid, but I tell my wife this. You got to find joy in every single day, because if you don't, your day will come and you'll be there and you won't be pleased with your life. And Gus lived the full life, brother.
How many people?
Come on, man.
You were talking, Andy and I were talking about him too. Mm-hmm. And you say the late Ambassador Rooney, obviously, yeah. Northside, they... I'm sure they were good friends.
I, of course, Dan Rooney lived on the north side and knew Gus well. But when we were writing his book, I co-authored his autobiography, Dan Rooney's. And there's a whole section on Gus the Icy Ball man in Dan Rooney's autobiography. He and Pat would walk over there and get icy balls when they went on one of their first dates. It was there. So,
it's a hell of a thing, man.
Yeah. No, it's part of Pittsburgh history, and it's a rite of passage for us who remain behind as some of those iconic figures pass. And it's a time for us to reflect.
It is, and be grateful. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember telling Larry this. You would go into the lobby at KDK downtown, Gateway 1, and you would seriously see Mr. Rooney walk in. Mm-hmm. He'd just walk from his house, come on over to the station. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I loved
him. It was
him.
A time and place and space that had a certain magic to it.
Loved the ambassador.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not trying to be morbid, and certainly not, but I'm trying to make sure that people understand the moments in their lives that are great and the people in their lives. My man just wasn't selling icy balls. He made a dent, man. Mm-hmm. He left a mark. He left a path. And most people don't leave a path. Some leave a path of destruction or ignorance or arrogance or hate. Mm-hmm. My point is that hopefully we can sit and think, man, this guy.
Simple joy.
Was a hell of a man making ice balls, for God's sake.
He brought a lot of joy.
Hell
touching
yeah,
a lot of lives.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, Andy, again. Visit the Heinz History Center. Go to the Point. On Thursday, you can help hoist the flag. What time?
1 o'clock down at the Point, Fort Pitt Museum and the Daughters of the American Revolution's blockhouse. And it's it's a joy being here with you guys, with the oldest, the first commercial radio station in the world.
We used to say we have the equipment to prove it, but then they ruined it by buying new stuff.
Larry was here on the first day.
From